Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are on the most efficient way of getting the show. You are in the iTunes search engine, you enter Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul, and my podcast pops right up. Lord Gaul was my username when I first fell in love with the sport, back when I was on the forums of K1 fans, Kakatugi, K1 USA. That was back when, you know, we were all lucky to get video clips sometimes and word of mouth a lot of other times. Got a lot more footage out today, got a lot more video out today, and we got a lot more kickboxing. Gonna go ahead and jump into the show. First, I'm gonna start off with some stadium Muay Thai. There was a big event, well, a decent event that went down in the, I want to say 3 days ago, the videos I'm going to go off today were actually on the 7th, so I'm talking a day ago, two days ago. Really want to go ahead and give you guys the newest thing. There was a Raja Stadium event. I'm going to talk about five fights on that card. I'll go ahead and get started with Pat Morcott, as he loses to Pet Pan Namrong in a very slick performance by Pet Pan Namrong. If you kind of pay attention to it, when I saw it, you know, you see the height, you think that, you know, Pet Morcott, who I've seen fight, you know, many times before, Pet Morcott, he usually is a, you know, a taller guy, pummels well in the clinch, scores from a distance, but I just thought that Pat Namrong, Pat Panomrung, I thought that his technique, his skill, his movement, it was just a little bit too savvy for Pet Morcott. I thought that Pet Panomrung, I thought that his movement, his scoring, he was just slicker to the point where it looked like Pat Morcott was frustrated. Like he was really looking to get in the clinch. He was really looking to engage, but it just wasn't happening for him. The moment he did close the distance, he ran into some body kits. Pet Panomrung did a good job of playing the distance, then playing in close well as far as in the clinch. I thought that he really doubled and tripled up on his kicks well. He was always two steps ahead, and it's just one of those performances where it's like you wonder if it just wasn't Pet Morcott's day. If they fought again, if he'd come with different effort, and I think that he would, but I just think that this night just belonged to a slicker, savvier fighter. Before I return to the rest of the card, I wanted to bring something up that I forgot. I usually watch my Muay Thai cards and get my fights from Muay Thais on YouTube, so that's Muay, M-U-A-Y, and then ties like a shirt tie. T-I-E-S, he does a great job of uploading the Lumpini Stadium, the Raja Stadium fights. He puts them up on a regular basis. So for those of you who are wondering what I'm talking about and you want to follow along, go ahead and take a brief moment to hit up YouTube, go to Muay Thais, and look at some of the fights that they have. This is literally the top five fights that he has that he just uploaded last, I believe, unless he did one, you know, recently, but go ahead and check this out if you want to follow along with what I'm saying. If the names come off weird, if you're wondering about the technique, because like I told you before, I'll do my best to kind of break the fight down in terms of a what's happening in the action narrative as opposed to the usual fighter A beats fighter B, and this is the story, you know. I think I'm going to go ahead and stick with this is what's happening and the elite, you know, the elite competitors who are putting it on the line weekly in Thailand and the major stadium. So I'm going to go ahead and move on through the card. Next fight I'm going to talk about is Ku Kang Wan as he takes on Superlek, K-E-A-W-K-A-N-G-W-A-N for Ku Kang Wan. And then we've got Superlek, S-U-P-R-L-E-K. It's an interesting fight in this one because I felt like it was kind of a stalemate, like no guy was really going to push the pace, no guy was really going to engage kind of through the third, and then all of a sudden Superlek decided to go, and then Ku Kang Wan decided to come back with them. So as Ku Kang Wan started to score in moments. I thought the fourth round was a really entertaining round. I'm telling you, great back and forth. The clinch was very active. The body kicks were active. Super liked the series. We threw a combination. He went to clinch, and he hit a sneaky elbow in there, and he pushed away, and he threw a body kick right afterwards. He had turned it up, and Ku Kang Won was up to the challenge. He'd returned with his own body kicks. He'd returned with, you know, slick stuff in the grapple. He would score some knees. I thought that the difference in the fight was there's two periods of time. I know there's one that I'm remembering specifically where the, you know, Ku Kang Won was able to knock Super Lek off balance, which always scores well. You got to, you know, Super Lek's got to get up, got to try to push the pace and get that back on the card. And sometimes when that happens, it's a lot easier to run people into your powerful offense. And I thought that that was the case here. Ku Kang Won gets the victory. I thought that it was a, you know, decent performance, not a standout performance, because I thought it took them a little bit too long to get going. Normally, I want people to get going, you know, I want the fighters to get going in the third. Because more times than not, the fight's going to be decided in the third and fourth. But in this case, you know, it's almost like they let it stay stagnant a little bit too long. You know, and then once we got, you know, late third, early fourth, and Super Lek started, you know, stepping the gas, I was grateful that Ku Kang Won was up to the challenge and decided to meet him with it. Because before that, I thought the action was just serviceable, but I thought the pacing hadn't picked up. But the gears switched significantly in the fourth round, and then fifth round was Super Lek trying to get the points back in the card, while Ku Kang Won did a good job of just score here, move, evade, stay up on the cards, and he gets the victory. Next fight I want to talk about is one of those. It's hilarious is when I, you know, when I bring it up, but I'll go ahead and say that the fight first. Pet Garm, I am not certain if I'm pronouncing this one right. PTNGARM. So I've got Pet and Garm, and then I've got Super Bowl, SUPRBALL, Super Bowl, like the big ones that you'd buy at, you know, I guess depends on where you are in the world, but convenience stores, like grocery stores, usually have those big play balls for kids. It's spelled like that, Super Bowl. So this is an interesting fight because, you know, I just kind of laugh when I see it happen, but There's a popular movie that came out in the 90s called The Great White Hope, and it's about a boxer who was undefeated, and his only loss was to this, you know, this black boxer. His only loss was to this white boxer when he was in the amateurs. So the whole thing is they kind of give the, you know, the white guy this made up record. They give him this WBC ranking because of his amateur career. It's just kind of all, it's a funny movie, but there's a great scene in it where the white fighter, whose name I can't remember, he starts to just absolutely destroy the champion. And then all of a sudden the champion says, "You trying to embarrass me on TV?" And then starts absolutely killing him. When I watched the fight between Super Bowl and Pet Garm, there was a moment in the fight where Pet Garm landed a elbow, and it just looked like Super Bowl was like, "What?" And then all of a sudden, he just started trying to dominate him to clinch. He was throwing him all over the place, landing kicks, big knees in the clinch, really getting good scores on the grapple, knocking him off balance. Not even the cleanest work, just you know, "I'm pissed that you, you know, got that elbow on me" type work. The elbow didn't cause a cut, but it was a significant score. And then all of a sudden, the pacing of it changed drastically. Despite this, Pet Garm had done some good things because Super Bowl's aggression had run him into some shots, and he still was fine. I still thought that he's pushing the pace. I thought that he's really taking the fight to him. But then there were just a couple moments here and there where Pet Garm was able to knock him off balance, was able to just kind of keep running him into offense and keep missing things. And, of course, if you miss strikes, it works against you on the scorecards. Going into the fifth, it seemed like Pet Garm's, you know, slick work might have done him a favor. Like, he might have done enough, and he was looking to play on the back. But he'd been playing backwards all fight because of the aggression of Super Bowl after that elbow. But it looked like his team was like, "Okay, score here and there, score here and there. Try to get out here with a decision." Not so much the case from Super Bowl's corner. They told him to go out, you know, go get him, and he did. He was so aggressive in that round. Round five, it's weird because if you got a slight lead, if the other guy's coming, they can get you if you don't hit him with nothing slick. It's vital for people who think the fight's over in round five. Make sure you pay attention to what Thais do in that fifth round if they feel they're up in the first four. The defense that they play, it can't just be blocking and moving. At some period of time, they've got to land a really well-timed, you know, teep to knock their opponent off balance, or really well-timed clinch, grapple that to kind of, you know, get their man to the ground. If you just play defense and wait for the cards, there's a chance that the right kind of aggression can get the round back and can get the fight back for a guy. And I think that was the case here at Super Bowl. I think that he really just kind of turned it up with his offense. I thought that he could do no wrong in the fifth round because of the aggression that he brought. He got in deep on the clinch and he got to the body lock around the waist. He didn't even need to finish the dump for them to give him the full points. You could just see the feel of it. Watch this fight for nothing more than the feel of the crowd in his corner. They're going absolutely nuts. Then after a series of body kicks, he had got into the clinch grapple. He got the foot planted and he created a trip and it knocked Petgarm off balance, and when that happened, his quarter just kind of waved it. We've got it. We turned the fight around. We've got the victory for sure. Went to the cards, and Super Bowl had won the fight. Interesting dynamic, and this is an important fight to people watch, particularly if you're a hardcore, into full rules Muay Thai, or if you're just a casual person who picked up the sport, you heard about it here and there, and you're trying it out at your gym. This is an important fight to understand how scoring is done in Thailand. If you can watch this fight, you can not just understand, what happened in the cards. Maybe that's a little confusing to you. But sometimes you can learn what's happening in pace and who's bringing the fight. Fight dictation. And this is a good example of, if you were to watch 10 fights from Thailand, I'm promising you, round 5, the majority of the time, those guys are kind of taking it easy. And sometimes both guys, when it's close, both guys will take it easy. Or it'll be so one-sided that one guy will just stop. This is an example of one guy's up. But the other guy's got a chance if he puts together the right kind of offense. Super Bowl put together that type of offense, and he was able to get the victory. We move on to Kaito versus Rongdet. K-A-I-T-O. Rongdet. R-U-A-N-G-D-E-T. This fight is simple. If you want to know something else about fight dictation, there's nothing worse, outside being KO'd, of course, than being physically dominated by your guy in the clinch. And Rongdet did just that. He threw Kaito to the ground. He got it started right away in the third round. Third round, I want to say maybe half minute and a half into the round, he maybe thrown Kaito on the ground for 4 dumps, which means you've been taken out of your offense, physically dominated, and thrown down the ground by your opponent. That's a lot of, knees and kicks to try to come back from. You've got a lot of scoring to try to get yourself back into that fight, and most of the time you can't. That's just too much. And Rongdet just dominated with it. Kaito tried to push the pace a few times, tried to get some elbows in the clinch, really tried to build on the knees to see if he can get the clinch to advantage back. And instead of trying to play it in open space, he tried to play it on the ropes. That way he could get Kaito to worry about his own posturing and keep him from getting the leverage, getting beneath him to get into the body lock clinches that was taking him down before. But as he got tired and Rongdet was up on the score, again, we've got somebody up in the fifth round. How do they play with it? And in this case, Rongdet had just scored and moved. Kato's pushing the pace. And Rongdet went into the body lock smooth, got both arms behind the lower back, took a couple of steps, and he finished a dump in the fifth round. Just beautiful work. You can't credit him enough for being able to get to those dominant clinch positions. They really are vital to the sport. And if you can't defend them, you're going to lose. And this is what happened in the situation with Kaito and Rongdet. Kaito, I'm sure a different night brings a different offering of offense, but if you can't stop a man's clinch, you're going to be in trouble. In particular, in the lower weight classes, this was at 111 pounds. So you've got to have a different type of offensive aggression to keep this from happening. Wasn't the case in this fight. So Rongdet was able to dominate in the clinch to victory. Last fight on this card I'm going to talk about is I think that will do it for those fights. There is a card fight I wanted to bring up that actually happened last month. And I want to bring it up because of my, super bias towards Ging Sung Lek. I've mentioned him. If you watch my year in kickboxing highlight, I mentioned a kid who I said is going to be the future of the sport. And Ging Sung Lek, I believe he's 15 years old now, 14, just turned 15, I want to say. And he is the future. This kid's amazing. Still winning, around the 110 pounds to 115. He still fights pretty, small. But Ging Sung Lek. And he's going to get a KO victory over Withayalek. Wittaylek. Wathalielek was pretty much scored on at will when Gingson let his offense go. Basically, the fight picks up in the second round when you're watching it, and then he's just scoring. He steps in, Gingson-Luck scores the offensive combination with his hands, then scores a combination of the kick. And then he just kind of seems like he's just standing there in his pacing. He can feel that he's scoring clean offense early. The end of the fight happens when Gingson-Luck's going to throw a body kick, and he's going to follow it with some hands, and then he's going to put his guard up. So he's going to go ahead and put both hands up, earmuffs up, but not the earmuffs where you're elbows are pretty much like out of the picture where you can't throw. Basically, there's putting your earmuffs up where your gloves come up high and your elbows are high too. And when your elbows are high too, you almost can't counter. So go ahead, and if you're listening to this right now, put your fist and put them on your head and ask yourself where your elbows are. If you put them, your fist, further back towards your ears, you'll feel your elbows come up. When that happens, you cannot counter. You are in a very, very difficult spot. You can't counter there. If they're by your ears, you can still get shots through the middle. Everything's opening. But because of gloves, because of boxing gloves, people try to do this and they get, you know, tentative. Or they think that they're safe behind this because they feel like they're blocking the hooks and the straight punches. But instead, imagine Thai style. Imagine putting yourself in a position where you play defense, but you can still throw. So all you want to do is, and this is just Thai style, this is boxing, this is proper blocking. You want to make sure that your blocking is in a position where you can still extend your arms. And in this situation, Gingson-Luck is going to do a step back, and Wathalielek is going to throw a short right elbow, and it's going to be countered with a really sharp left elbow that hits the jaw clean, and Wathalielek goes down. KO win for Gingson-Luck. And here's the interesting thing about the KO. It's such a weird delayed reaction because after it scores, it's like Wathalielek's last, function that he had told his brain to do was to try to push Gingson-Luck away. So he reaches out his hands after he's hit by the elbow, like he kind of makes this concussed move, and he reaches out to push away. And then after he does the pushing motion to nothing, he kind of falls straight back, and he's out cold. And it's a weird look. And I remember if you look at the comment section, some people say, it's fake. It couldn't have happened that way. There's no way that elbow did that kind of damage. I still don't see how the KO could happen. You come across, you hit that jaw clean, but worse, you hit someone where they're not expecting to be hit. That sort of thing can happen. Another example of this, for those of you who aren't as familiar with combat sports, look at Masato's KO victory over Virgil Colicuto. He lands the finishing strike, and Virgil's functions still have him do one motion before the whole kind of wave of the KO kicks in, and then he just drops the mat out cold. It's a weird kind of delayed reaction. If you watch fighting enough, you'll see this sort of thing happen. But that's what looks like happens in the case of Gingson-Luck. Now, if the guy really took a dive, I'm not going to deny those who have inside information on it. I'm just going to make an argument for, as a person who's been watching striking sports for a while, sometimes you get hit with a shot that the way they taught it when I was coming up, and I use it every once in a while with my students, it's the shot that KOs you is the shot you didn't see. And this one was, he just threw an elbow, and like the counter left elbow came so quick that I just think it just hit him, and like his body was, still trying to, figure out what just happened because it was in the motion of doing something else. So then he had a delayed reaction, then he just falls flat on his back. So if you see the KO and you're like, man, it's fake, I'm not sure if it's real, that kind of deal, I'm not going to go crazy on you. I just want to make an argument for this sort of thing isn't uncommon, and it was a pretty devastating short elbow by Gingson-Luck, who, I'm hoping that he has another just stellar. I want him to be undefeated for the year, and I'm hoping that he moves himself into the higher weight classes. He's not going to get too big, but if he can settle himself into the mid-120s, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. But he's definitely a younger, smaller guy, and time will tell what his body grows into. We're going to go ahead and leave the stadiums and talk about the Big Show. Before I get into the full Glory breakdown, because this is going to be a very Glory review from here on out, I'm going to go ahead and throw in there that on the Copenhagen card, where Nicky Holtkin will be defending his title against Johan Kangulo, They added a couple of fights. Harat Gagorian, who will be, hold on, let me make sure I get my notes correct. We've got Muhammad Elmir, who will be going against Nicholas Larson. This is a good choice because Nicholas Larson, of course, I think he trains in Copenhagen. I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure he trains there in Denmark. I know he trains in Denmark, but I think he trains in Copenhagen. But Muhammad Elmir is a guy who trains out of Holland. I don't know where he is now. He did train out of Holland for a long period of time. I don't know where he is. But he's a guy who I've known on the scene. I've seen him in many cards at France and Europe and so on. France and throughout Europe. Muhammad Elmir, that should be an entertaining fight with him and Nicholas Larson. Nicholas Larson has some good tools. Just haven't seen him on the circuit in a while. And then we also have Shimsi Bakhiri. He will take on Harat Gagorian. Shimsi was one of the main guys that they used back when Glory had first kind of, you know, made that its Showtime roster. Once its Showtime roster was absorbed by the Glory group, Shimsi Bakhiri was one of the guys that they used before and after. You know, they had brought that group in, making some interesting matchups. We just haven't seen him compete in a while. His most notable thing in the last 3 years was when there was a challenge at his gym when somebody, it's a great video. I brought it up when it happened. But pretty much what happens with Shimsi Bakhiri is someone, one of his old students left the gym and they went to go, I guess, do their own thing. They left on bad terms. And then they returned with like a bunch of gangsters and they like, you know, challenged him to this fight in his, you know, in the gym, and they're like forcing him to fight, and there's video of it because I guess their goal is to show the, you know, the teacher becoming the master, if you will, and then, you know, of course, because they've got like some ground and some MMA or whatever, and Shimsi's, you know, for the most part, all kickboxing. So then they have this like fight. I mean, I'm not making this up. This really happened, but basically they have this on video fight where they're playing these guys fighting in this gym and everybody is kind of cheering for the guy to like beat Shimsi Bakhiri up. And then after they, you know, strike for a little bit, there's a takedown in it. And then the guy, you know, you're just assuming he's going to get a choke. He's going to finish it. And he doesn't finish it on Shimsi. Bakhiri gets out of it, starts to win the fight. And the moment he starts to win the fight, the other guy's like team jumps on him. They jump in and that's kind of when the video kind of cuts off. Turns out he was okay from the end of it, but it's got to be a scary situation. Someone came in and, you know, forced you to fight like, you know, it was a damn movie. But he's back in the kickboxing ring. He's going to go against Harat Gagorian. He's also very, very talented. Harat Gagorian got more opportunities when its Showtime was around. But really, Murat Gagorian, his brother, is the one that's been fighting in K1, who's been fighting in, you know, Glory. He's the one that we've gotten used to seeing. So I'm happy that, you know, both of the guys, they train out of... they're both Belgian fighters, both very skilled. Belgian fighters who have Armenian roots. Both very, very skilled. Should be a lot of fun. I'm hoping to see what comes from them in the future. And these two middleweight bouts should be very, very entertaining. But we're going to go ahead and get to the heart of what this podcast is going to be about. It is going to be about the high-level kickboxing card that they have put together on this Glory Paris card, which is just an absolutely awesome card, top to bottom. The reason why people are critical of some of the Glory USA cards, people weren't that, you know, upset with the K1 USA cards as they are with the Glory cards, but I look at these cards, I look at this card in particular, and the moment that I saw it, I say, this card represents the best fighters in the world. Your top organization needs to do that all the time. People need to think this is the organization that has the elite athletes. This is the organization where if I want to make it, this is my highest league. You know, so if you're playing, you know, if you're a footballer in England, you grow up, you want to be in the Premier League. You know, like that's, you got to think about that. Or La Liga. Or if you're in the States with our football, you want to be in the NFL. You got to have this, the highest goal for me is to be a regular competitor at the highest level, and then to win the world championship in the highest level, in the most recognized weight class, and so on. In particular, this is important in kickboxing, because there is a world champion in like every gym. Three world champions, like every gym, depends on where you go. So because there's so many belts being thrown around, so many promotions that have titles, the person who's holding the glory title has got to be considered in that weight class the best fighter in the world. And that's the person for everyone to shoot for. Now, outside of the featherweight division, you can definitely make the case that in every other weight division, their number one is the number one. Or they've got the, you know, the next few guys around that person are candidates to be the best in the world, you know. So, like, their top five are the best five in the world. So, outside of featherweight, I truly believe that from middleweight and up, from lightweight, welterweight, middleweight, Glory has the best fighters in the world in those weight classes, for the most part. And I look at this card top to bottom, the moment it came out, and I was like, this is it. This is what a kickboxing card should look like. This is what the best organization in the world should be putting out on a regular basis. This card doesn't. We're going to go ahead and jump into the fights on this pair's card, which should just be all action top to bottom. I mean, it's not just great fights, but great fights to push stories and narratives. And that's vital to how this game works. It really, really is. So we're going to go ahead and just start off with the featherweight undercard. There's several featherweight cards, but we'll start off with this first fight. Mikhail York makes his return as he goes against Eddie Nate Slimani. And York, of course, York, if you are wondering where you heard that name before, he is the guy who just competed in a tournament for them in Amsterdam. He was able to win his first round fight before stopped by eventual champion Musab Amrani. York's a talented guy, and he's going against another talented guy, and Eddie Nate Slimani. I think that kickboxing flow leans, could be hit and miss, could be even. I think that Slimani does a good job of returning offense. I've watched a couple of his fights in preparation for this. In one of the fights, I was like, this guy never throws combinations. He did a lot of moving, a lot of single scores, and 1-2 was the most that he had built on his offense, maybe because of his opponent. Maybe his opponent was a big-time counter guy. But in that game, he played a lot of single strikes. In another fight where he, goes, where he gets KO stoppage, he blends things together pretty well. Combinations pretty well. He's able to get a knee that scores it down, and then later he's able to put it together a combination that scores a big time, KO finish. It was a kick, and then he got his balance back and he threw a punch right after it. York has got decent kickboxing flow, and his power is all right, and I think that he can match point for point if the opportunity presents himself. He can match Nate Slimani. The advantage that Slimani has is Slimani has a very good feel for throwing spin and stuff. Like, he has a good idea of range, and he has a good idea of when's the best time. Throw a spinning hook kick, jumping knee. He just has a good feel for that. I'm expecting at some period of time during this fight, and he's going to have a pretty good crowd. Like, he's pretty popular there in France. I think he's going to have some people come out and see him. I think at some period of time, Eddie Nate Slimani is going to score a down one of those tricky shots, and I think that'll be the difference in the fight. I definitely think that Slimani also has the opportunity to KO York. I wouldn't rule it out at all. He's definitely skilled enough to do it, but I am leaning towards him to win a decision, but a lopsided decision thanks to what happens to the down. Next fight on the card I'm going to talk about is the fight I am actually most curious to see on the whole card. We've got the young up-and-coming Josh Johnsey against the young up-and-coming Anatoly Moiseev. These are guys who are super prospects in the sport. Anatoly Moiseev got the great combination low kick feel. He also has spinning stuff that he can throw here and there. Good counter offense. Good feel for fighting. Good strong stance. He can block things and so on. And you got Josh Johnsey, combination kick machine, in particular if you've got an orthodox stance. He's got good movement. This fight is already, in my mind, just go ahead and mark it down. It's going to an extra round. I think the kickboxing action is just going to be so intense. The back and forth is going to be so crazy. Everything in me about this fight leans draw. If you force me to pick a winner, I could say Moiseev could get the advantage on the scorecard just because he could land a spinning something, and that could be the decider. It's like, oh, landed a spinning something. But as far as going shot for shot, I think Josh Johnsey's got a really good chance. In particular, thanks to, you know, Moiseev's last performance. And I think that it's not that I'm saying that he's a bad defensive fighter, but I do think that when he went his Teo Mekalik, I thought that Teo had some moments where he was scoring some pretty consistent offense. And just Moiseev was able to score and range and come back. I could see Moiseev coming out and really taking a first round, and then Jiaxiaozi coming out and really taking a second round, because sometimes Moiseev gets behind that shell and he starts looking for the big counter, the big, you know, spinning hook kick. I would not be surprised at all if Jiaxiaozi outscores him and wins this bout. But this right here is what you want. Two young, up-and-coming fighters who are going to test themselves against each other. That's what you want in the sport. In boxing, you know, I'm a big boxing fan. I'm a big combat sports fan, but big boxing fan. And the premium, or the channel Showtime has a TV show called Showbox. And the goal of Showbox is usually two undefeated young guys testing each other. So sometimes the young guys will be from wherever. You'll have one guy from, like, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, and then you have another guy from Florida, and then they'll fight in New York. But the goal of the fight is to say, hey, we've got this 12-1 guy against this 12-0 guy. Let's see who is legit. And that's kind of what you get from the result. You say, okay, this guy's record might have been pumped a little bit. He's got some more work to do. Or this guy got the victory. He's going to be a superstar. Or even this guy got the victory, but he's got some work to do himself. That's what comes when you get young fighters going against each other at a certain time. Jiaxiaozi and Moiseev are young stars in the division, a division that's got a lot of stars in the early 30s. But they're young guys in the division, younger guys in the division, who have the great kickboxing flow and acumen to be elite stars down the road. These two guys fighting now is good for both of them despite the result of it. Really excited about this bout. It should be a lot of fun. Next fight on the card, you've got Jason Wilnes as he takes on Philip Verlinden. I'm telling you, if you had told me 2 years ago which Wilnes would have more success overall in the kickboxing world, Jafar Wilnes or Jason Wilnes, I would have said Jason Wilnes, no question about it. Because he bites down, he throws really, really hard, despite the fact he doesn't have a lot of KOs. I remember me and Ryan Scullia talking about that back in the day when Ryan Scullia was writing for LiverKick.com. But really bites down, really throws effective offense. He is going to go against Verlinden, who's competed at pretty much every weight class, and he kept moving down because he could move down. His body weight at, you know, super heavyweight, clearly he just didn't have the KO pop. He doesn't have the KO pop at middleweight. He's just not that kind of fighter. But he's got kickboxing flow, and he's got length, and he's got a good understanding of scoring consistently, which is what it takes to win in kickboxing long term. So, you know, I look at a guy who fought in Glory. They're, you know, the Glory 4 that had the big super tournament that didn't go off as well as I, you know, I thought it was in, you know, my mind. When I first heard about it, I was like, oh, man, it's going to be a huge tournament one night. Didn't play out the way that I figured it would. But Verlinden fought on that night. And from there on, he moved down to light heavyweight. And then, of course, he lost to, you know, Tyrone Spong there. Had a victory over Melvin Manhoff, I want to say. When he first got down to middleweight, just kind of slowly progressed down, you know, and it's like, where does he go from there? He's trying to make a home at middleweight. Now he's going to try to make a run at things. And he wouldn't have much to do to get there. If he could just win two in a row, I think he could put himself in position to get there, because I don't know how many middleweights they have on roster right now. So my lean in this one is for Philip Verlinden. You know, I think Wilnes could load up a little bit too much. If he plays with just combination low kicks, I think he'll be fine. But I think if he looks to just head hunt and look for a kill shot against Verlinden, Verlinden's actually a pretty sturdy guy. You know, he took some good shots from Tyrone, kept fighting, took some big shots at the higher weight classes, kept going. I think that he's going to be able to outpoint Jason Wilnes, and I think he will get the victory on this night. Of the three title fights, we move on to the first one, the featherweight title fight between last year's breakout star out of nowhere, one of the breakout stars, I should say, in the sport. See here, Adam and Chuck. And he gets to fight Masab Amrani in his first title defense. Amanchuk, very savvy, plays second. He's a counter fighter. Had some really slick moments against Murat Grigoryan, a fight that he took at a higher weight class on like 3 days' notice just because he was at Mike's gym and they asked Mike if he had a guy. Mike had a small guy who's already on weight, so he brought that guy. And he was able to get that victory. He then went on to fight in the K1 tournament in their 65 kg but he was an alternate, and he won his alternate fight, but he didn't get used in the main field. He then returned to fight for glory a couple more times. He gets a title shot, and he beats Gabriel Varga in Amsterdam. And a fight that, let's just, I think it was Amsterdam. It could have been France, but I'm pretty sure it was Amsterdam. But we look at that fight, and man, it was not what one would call aesthetically pleasing. It was a lot of holding. They got together in the clinch after like most of the exchanges. Adam Chuck had scored well in spots, but he was just kind of grabbing onto Varga, keeping Varga from, you know, scoring well on the cards. Wasn't a pretty fight at all. He now goes against Musab Imran, the man who can't be in a bad fight. Why can't he be in a bad fight? Because Musab Imran, he's going to throw that heat. He ain't playing. Five rounds, he will try to kill you for five rounds. He is not playing. I think that Musab Imran will be able to outscore Adamczyk because Adamczyk will score. He's got to score something to keep Imran off of him. And I just don't think he's that kind of a hitter. So he's got to really score something that could knock Musab Imran off balance. But if he just tries to play counter and grabbing on, Imran will just keep throwing even though he grabs him, you know, because he's going to throw. He's going to come out, throw combinations. Last time he came out in a southpaw stance. I don't know if he's going to play with that this time because he's going against another southpaw. But time will tell. Like, I really want to see these two get after it, but I want to see it look the way it should. I want to see what does it look like with, excuse me, Musab Imran scoring his effective clean offense, combinations and kicks, big combinations inside, big hooks. See here, Adam and Chuck playing the counter game, scoring kicks to knock you off balance, small steps left and right to make you pursue a little bit too deep, playing his counter game, playing his slick and, you know, throwing his left hand inside of your exchanges. I want him to continue to be who he is without this being a hug fest for five rounds. I think Musab Imran is going to get the nod on the card, and I wouldn't be surprised if he lands something significant to the body that made the fight even easier for himself. But I think Musab Imran will be your glory featherweight champion. We move on. We have a heavyweight bout between Freddie Camacho, and he goes against Javier Vinny. I love this fight. Vinny is a guy who you're grooming to be a star down the road, in particular because he's from the States, you know, so you want to have successful guys from the States. It helps your brand. The way he's been moved, I mean, he had some forgettable guys in the tournament and so on, but the Chai Lewis Parry win, but most importantly, the Daniel Sam win is a big teacher for him. And the Daniel Sam win, we had this guy who very, very skilled, very experienced, I should say, fighter who's been doing this for a while. And Daniel Sam had this game plan where he was going to go ahead and let Vinny, you know, blow on the KO shots and just kind of play defense. And then at the end of the second and the third, he's going to push the pace and go after Vinny. Vinny was able to get enough effective offense going in the first and early in the second round to get up on the cards. So he had two rounds in the bank. So in the third round, when he was just taking low kicks, even though he was badly hurt, he didn't go down. He bit on the mouthpiece. He toughed it out. He got to the cards. And when he got to the cards, he got his hands raised. It was what you need to happen. You need a young, up-and-coming fighter to test himself against somebody who's been fighting at a high level for a long time. And, you know, Sam's had, you know, mixed results and glory, you know, wins here, losses here. Same thing in Infusion, wins here, losses here. But Vinny, that was the kind of fight he needed. Camacho is a better fighter than Sam. Even if they met and Sam were to beat Camacho, that would mean that Sam bested him in that day. But if you look at the resume overall, you'd say Camacho has had a better fight run, better fight resume than Sam. So I'm not talking about skill versus one another. Maybe the bigger, stronger Sam gets a victory over Camacho. But Camacho has got more experience, more elite wins. He is the perfect next step up fight for Vinny because he's a good guy to move you in your career, but he's not an elite heavyweight in the division yet. So you are still preparing yourself to go against the Rico Verhevens of the world. But it starts with winning against Freddie Camacho. I got Vinny winning. I wouldn't be surprised if Vinny won by KO in the second round. But I'm telling you, the longer the fight goes, the more the savvier guys can figure Vinny out a little bit. So he's got to be consistent. He's a pretty good athlete. He's got to stay with, you know, his distance, his combination, his low kick game. Gokhan Saki said it best when I interviewed him like 6 years ago. We're in Thailand together. And he said that Freddie Camacho really doesn't have a fight style. And what he meant by that is there's nothing that he goes out there and does that you could say, oh, this is who he is. He's trying to do something to score effectively different every single round. Like, he just rarely do you see him come out and go combination low kick. Rarely do you see him come out and play body kicks and then straight punches. He just does something a little different every round, just, and he's able to put rounds in the bank. And despite the fact that, you know, he's been stopped by some really good guys, he's also got some wins on some really good guys. So we'll see. Good fight for Vinny. I think he wins. Xavier Vinny wins this over Freddie Camille. But it's in France. Anything Freddie does is going to get the crowd to go nuts. So could be a Camille win too. Fun fight. Next fight on the card, good and bad. We got Saul Calavari going against Artem Vakhadov. Two of the elite guys in the world. Definitely two top five fighters in the world at light heavyweight as they compete for the light heavyweight title. The bad of this, of course, is this was originally going to be a return of Gokhan Saki, who kind of had a bad year in terms of he, you know, got, you know, promoter and, you know, Dubai said, I'll pay you this much, you know, this much money for you to come fight for me and my brand. And if you do that, then you'll have more, you know, it'll be better for you to fight who I put together for you than it will be for you to fight in glory consistently. Saki decided to pursue the money. He went over, pursued the money. Turns out he fought like once last year, and he said he's trying to work things out with Glory, but it didn't look good because they were offering him so much more money. I'm telling you this right now, and there's a lot of people who listen. There's some, you know, Moroccan fan base. We've got people from, you know, the Dubai area and so on. Those guys might be able to put together fight cards, but they ain't going to have the consistency that Glory's going to have. Glory's already got their year schedule. Well, I saw something that I thought was their year schedule posted the other day, but they know what's going on. They have a direction. They're putting events out there. But if you're a premier athlete and they're just looking to move you like how they would move a premier boxer, it's not going to move your brand like competing and beating the best guys in the world. Kickboxing's not that kind of sport. We got to have one roof. That's just kind of how it is. And because K1 focuses on the smaller weight classes right now, it's acceptable for us to have two roofs. But for the most part, the best fighters in the world need to fight in one place so that everybody knows where to get them. If you decide to take your brand and some of the guys who fought in K1, that's why they've got that history. So they've got the brand that they can use after it. Sure, go make your money. Go fight in, you know, Kunlun and go fight in, you know, Dubai or whatever. But just don't put all your eggs in that basket. Don't go into it thinking, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Fight for this super rich guy on his fight promotion. Because if the people don't come out, fight promotions don't make a lot of money. And it just becomes some hobby that the guy did and not something that he's invested in. When you're invested in something, you put time into it, you put life into it, you put everything into it. But if you're just a fan of, you know, whatever elite kickboxing star and you want to put an event on and you promise him more money, don't see that as a long-term theme for success. But if it works to your favor, if you can do them both, do them both. And I wish that as Glory was working things out with Saki, who finally, you know, resigned to whatever, I hope that in their signature they say, hey, if that fight comes up, go out and make that money, man. You got some friends in Dubai that want you to, you know, fight. They're going to give you $1 million to go against, you know, Joe Slip and Fall. Go ahead and beat Joe Slip and Fall up. Knock him out and get that money. But when you want to be the best in the world, come fight for us. And I think Saki had that year off, and he's like, hey, I got, you know, pretty good money, but I think that I want to be the best. I want to compete with the best. He was the champion. They had to have a fight for his title last year. Calavari wins it, and we've got a division that's got, you know, still missing two of the better stars in the world, and Spong and Saki. And Saki's return will be huge for the weight class, so we're hoping that he's back, and he's back on a regular basis. As for this fight, Saul Calavari did not put on one of his better efforts against Zach Mokasa. Now, again, that has a lot to do with the fact that Mokasa is just an absolute physical stud who's looking to KO you at all times. But there was a lot of grabbing. Fight wasn't very aesthetically pleasing. Artem Vakhadov's not that. He's going to look to score consistent offense. He's got good boxing from both stances. He has a good timing on his body rep. He's going to play combinations and kicks. I think Artem Vakhadov is going to win this fight. I really do. I think he's going to be your champion. He's been getting close. He's been doing better. They've, you know, fought before, and it was entertaining then. I just like Vakhadov's work. I think that he's, you know, hittable enough for Calavari to have his moments. But five rounds, man, I think Vakhadov can outscore him for three. I think it's going to be a really entertaining fight. I think that light heavyweight division You know, which is a new thing. This is a new thing for us in our sport. Not that we haven't had guys at the weight class before, but those guys always fought super heavyweights. For us to be, you know, now, what, 4 years, 5 years with a recognized title around this weight class, it's interesting, you know. So I'm excited about this bout, and I think that the headliner of the Super Fight Series, which will be on Fight Pass, will be a championship win by Artem Vakhadov. And I think he will move on to fight Gokhan Saki somewhere, someplace, and it'll be a lot of fun. So we get to the TV card. TV card is going to have four-man tournament at lightweight, and then we're going to have a super fight, and then, of course, we've got the heavyweight champion defending. Let's go ahead and go into the tournament. Jaime Kalabali is going to take on Murat Grigoryan, and he's going to lose. Kalabari does some slick things, but he plays a little bit too much Muay Thai. Sometimes he plays with some sneaky knees here and there. He needs more kickboxing flow and offense. And Murat Grigoryan already brings a pretty effective combination of low kick game, but he also does it with pressure. And Josh Johnson, he was able to score combinations and low kicks at will against Kalabali. Go ahead and add a guy who throws more offense and walks forward a lot more. You're really going to get a good performance from Murat Grigoryan. I think he's going to clearly win this fight on the cards, if not score a down, two downs, and move on by stoppage. The other fight on the card is the weirdest one. Sitichai Sitsangpinang is going to take on Zavit Kyria. Why is this weird? Because last year in France, this fight happened, and it did not go well for Zavit Kyria. I cracked the joke when I first saw it. I said, man, who did Kyria, you know, piss off to, you know, go out there and have to get Sitsangpinang again? And in truth, I didn't take into account that maybe part of him hates that performance enough to say, glory, give me another shot at this guy. He just lost his title fight. You're probably not going to use him in the title fight for a while, which I don't think they should. I think the winner of this four-man tournament should just, you know, get recognition for it. But I don't think it should earn them a title fight if it's Sitsangpinang. If it's, you know, Grigoryan, I'm fine with it. If it's Sitsangpinang, who just fought for the title, and you barely have enough title fights as is on the year, use Robin to fight Petrosian, use Robin to fight, you know, first, and then maybe do this fight later. But I just think that I just can't see what Kyria could have done to close the distance against Sitsangpinang in this, you know, gap. You know, I think that Sitichai is just a different level of fighter. And I don't know what he's, you know, thinking when this fight came up, other than I'm looking for a paycheck and glory. But perhaps he, you know, was sick, or maybe just things didn't work out his way and he wants to try again. But if you've ever seen Zavit Kyria fight, I just think it's just a matter of time before he tries a jumping, spinning hook kick and falls on the ground. And then the rest of the fight will be him losing by decision. The winner of this tournament is going to be Sitsangpinang. I want to say Murat Grigoryan. He's got the pressure and he's got the style to score, but just Sitsangpinang is so tough to get a hold of. Whatever, I'm going to go on the line. I'm going to go with Murat Grigoryan. I think he's not going to go down. I think he's going to pressure. I think he's going to throw enough hands, and I don't think that's all going to score clean, but I think that the pressure will keep Sitsangpinang behind his earmuffs. I think that he'll earmuff move, look to score in between, and he's going to look to disrupt with body kicks, and if anything goes as they did with Robin van Roosmalen, he's not going to get any love for the body kicks. He's just going to get, you know, because they don't call them body kicks. They just see them as kicks on the arm. They should be calling it a body kick. But because of the way they score things, I think that Grigoryan has the style to get up on the cards and get the W in this one. So I'm going to pick Grigoryan to win it. Super fight. We've got Mirko Grünhardt, and he is going to take on Cedric Dombe. Cedric Dombe has already fought for the promotion. He has a loss. Mirko Grünhardt is coming off of a heartbreaking, what should have probably been a decision in his favor, over a good Nicky Holtzkin. Nicky Holtzkin did score the, you know, more significant shots, but Grünhardt clearly outscored him. So he just picks himself back up, gets back in there, looks to fight again. Dumbo, of course, coming off the loss to Johan Kangulo, but I thought he fought well in there. I thought there were some competitive rounds. I thought that you could make the argument for Dumbo, but Mirko Grünhardt is already of a killer mentality. Mirko Grünhardt's got a great mentality for fighting, period. If there's two people that you should learn from in fighting as far as mentality goes, Mirko Grünhardt is one of them, and Melvin Manhoff is the other. Now, if you want to be more tactical, if you want to have like a more, you know, think, you know, have more of a process to how you fight. I don't want to exclude that from you. I'm not saying that, you know, pick these guys because they've got the right kind of aggression. What I'm talking about when I say Mirko Grünhardt and I say Melvin Manhoff, they have the best fight memories ever. And a great fight memory is a short fight memory. If you can forget that you were stopped and get back in there and try to kill a guy, you're in great shape in this game. And the best thing about Melvin Manhoff is all these years, he's lost by KO to a lot of guys. But if he goes out and fights tomorrow, you know he's going to look to be the shark in the water. He's looking to score by stoppage. Mirko Grünhardt is that kind of a dude. He went to a kickboxing point-scoring game against Nicky Holtzkin because, you know, standing in front of Nicky Holtzkin, Nicky's going to sit down and rip something to that body and so on. But Mirko Grünhardt, the guy who won the four-man tournament last year, the guy who ran over Jabbar Askarov, he has a mean streak about him at times. He has a, you know, I'm going to get you out of there. And I think he's got that mentality for Dumbe here. Dumbe could have some moments, but I think he's going to get stopped by Mirko Grünhardt, who's just every bit of ready to bring the war. Last fight on the card, we've got Rigo Verhirin as he goes against Mladen Brustovic. Brustovic isn't an unskilled guy. So for those of you who are like, man, you know, who is this guy? We only know him for getting, you know, low kicked to death by Benjamin Adebuyi. But if you don't remember that, he actually has a head kick KO over Tafar Willness, who's, you know, and that was like 2014, I want to say. Turned his career around, Jafar Willness. Different guy now. Brustovic, on the other hand, has, you know, been kind of staying in the same area. And if you're coming off a loss to a guy that Rico just, you know, blew out, makes you a low kick loss at that, and makes you wonder, how is Brustovic going to do? Brustovic's got to land something. He's got to land a high kick or something to keep Rico Vieira off of him, because there's no heavyweight in this planet that's as technical with his combination to his low kick work than Rico Vieira. He is bringing the heat right now with that weight class. And to go with it, because of the sparring he's been doing with Tyson Fury, because of the extra work he's been doing with, you know, strength conditioning, with taking care of his body, with, you know, looking to score consistent offense, he is a murderer right now. And I do believe that he is going to win this by stoppage. I think that's going to be a low kick stoppage. It could open up something with the hands, but the bigger, stronger athlete should win this one. If Mladen was slowed by low kicks in three rounds, go ahead and add two more rounds with a guy who's got a better feel for low kick chop and low kick scoring. Rico Verhirin should hear and still after the fight event is over with in glory pair. So should be a fun card, everybody. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. I'll be back next week to talk about the results of this. And, you know, I'm going to start getting some interviews and stuff in towards the end of the month. Tis the season in kickboxing. I mean, there's something great going on all the time in kickboxing and Muay Thai. Yakao's coming up this month. K1's got one early. The Fight League in Holland, they've got one coming up. They're throwing down. Right now is a great time to be a fan of kickboxing. So definitely follow up on that. And then one more note. I want to finish the show on one thing. There's a friend that we in the kickboxing community have, and he goes by the name of Kazuma Turuya. Go ahead and spell that out for you guys. Kazuma Turuya. And he uploads to Kickboxing News, and he does it in a regular. It's kind of his blog thing. And basically what's happening in his life is he just got, you know, a great guy who's been putting out good kickboxing content, videos. He posts things about what's going on in the Muay Thai world and in the kickboxing world, in the Japan fight scene, things that we can't get a hold of easily. He posts on cards in Argentina and just all over the world. He really follows the Russian scene well. He does a great job of this, and he kind of does it just, you know, it's one of those thankless things. It's one of those things that, you know, me, I do this podcast for free because I love the sport. He's out there doing something similar with kickboxing, with his kickboxing news. And he decided recently that, you know, just he wants to focus on other things, and he really wants to, pay a little bit more attention to what he wants to do with his next move in his life and you know, social scene and so on. But he's decided to step away from kickboxing news. And I just want to say to Kazuma, thank you for your contributions to the sport. I've always been a fan of yours. I greatly appreciated the things that you've posted, and I followed your site for a long time. I'm hoping that you're still going to be a fan enough to, you know, watch the event and maybe, you know, comment on Twitter here and there. But man, we really do appreciate you on the sport, and you know, I mean, not just me, but you know, Dave Walsh of Liverkick.com. You know, even as I look, I remember you posted it. I mean, Hesse Hege is one of the fighters. He posted something. You know, oos, like everybody's paying their respects to you. You know, Dan Black. I remember he posted something as well. Andre Stoica, you've got people who in this sport appreciate what you've done, and we really do hope that you make the you know, the best of the what life has to offer, you know, and you know, God bless, brother. Be good, really enjoy your life, you know, search everything, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, don't just pursue a spouse, decide what you want to do with your career, you know, pursue God, definitely, live full. But we really appreciate your life, and we greatly thank you for your contributions to kickboxing. So shout out to Kazuma, Turuya, and everybody. Love you all. God bless, and have a good one. Peace.